This is CliffCentral.com. A woman is an entity, she's got a right to be. Give her freedom and equality, she's got a right to be. Woman got a right to be.
Yep, you heard that song right. A woman is an entity, she's got a right to be. Give her freedom and equality, she's got a right to be. That song was played appropriately, and it is appropriate for today's topic. Yes, today's title, today's topic, men are studs, women are sluts. Yes, you heard that. Men are studs, women are sluts. My guest today is an incredible woman. Dr. Tlaleng Mofokeng. A lot of you follow you. Follow her on Twitter at Dr. Tlaleng. She's a reproductive doctor at DISA Clinic, deputy chairperson for the Sexual Health and Reproductive Justice Coalition, and has a lifestyle column called Let's Talk About Sex on the Sunday Times. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have over 18,500 followers on Twitter. You're obviously very popular, and I wonder why.
Is that still a thing? Do we still look at that?
I do. You know, mm-hmm. There's a reason why I mention, you know, how many followers that you have, because, mm-hmm. you know, you... I mean, I remember how I hesitated to send you an email to invite you to the show.
I could read it through the email, by the way.
Because, I mean, okay, you're popular for a reason. You know, I don't want to use the word controversial, but okay, let me start off by alerting or making the listener aware, you know, just to give them a glimpse of what you're about and mm-hmm. some of the reasons why you are so popular. Your Twitter header mm-hmm. is that of a minion wearing yes. a surgical mask.
Yes.
I thought that was genius.
That's the cutest thing.
That is genius. I love that. And you know why I like you? You're a straight shooter. Mm-hmm. You're very witty. And you don't shy away from expressing your stance and views. And you don't hesitate to call people out, which is why I never want to step on your toes, especially on Twitter.
Please, Sonia, I'm not that bad.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's what you say, but I choose to believe otherwise. So, Dr. Tlaleng, mm-hmm. your interests are in women's health and yes. rights, reproductive justice, as mm-hmm. well as comprehensive sexual health education.
Yeah.
What is the Sexual Health and Reproductive Justice Coalition?
Okay, so that is a coalition made up of individuals, right? We've come together as South Africans and formed a network that is working in the area of sexuality, gender, and reproductive health. And basically, our aim is to get reproductive justice. So we made up of people like myself who are clinicians or service providers in the field of health. You've got researchers in the different campuses around different universities. You've got people who work in the NGO spaces. You've got people who work in the funding spaces. You've got people that have quite a vast global experience just in terms of policy analysis, policy making, advisory roles, you know, in all the different global organizations. And of course, what we aim to do then is to bring all of our rich experiences, our knowledges, like expertise, together for one mission, which is reproductive justice. And we can go into depth about what that means, but that's really what it's all about.
Okay. And tell me why you advocate for the legalization or decriminalization of sex work.
All right. So basically, the whole thing is about decriminalization, not legalization. Legalization okay. is a different process and a different sort of outcome altogether.
And so, you'll explain it to me.
Yeah. So basically, what we're saying is decriminalize it. So if you are a cop or anyone, you know that Laleng is a sex worker, they are run my business, you know, there's different industry standards, there's laws, bylaws, all of those things are adhered to. It's a business like any other business that I'm running. You go about your day, you don't bat an eyelid, you move forward, right? That's yes. what decrim is about. It's about allowing people the space to operate safely, mm. but for the benefit mostly of women who are the ones who are into sex work.
Yeah.
And sex work is about adult, consensual sex.
Yes.
And that's what it's about. So we're not talking about human trafficking. We're not talking about rape of children. We're not talking about, you know, sex slavery. We're really talking about adults who say, I'm tlaleng, I want to be a sex worker, whether it's by listening to clients at night and giving them their comfort, whether it's by dressing up and dancing for them in a sensual way that they prefer, or it's by, yes, some sex workers engage in penetrative sex, some not, some only oral sex. So there's a whole spectrum of what sex work is. And what we are advocating is for is to say, listen to sex workers, listen to what they want. And we mean sex workers on the ground, right?
Yes.
There was a study that was done approximately saying 150 odd sex workers in South Africa. You don't have to guess that's a gross underestimation, because not a lot of people will even identify as sex workers, but what they are engaging in on a daily basis is some form of sex work. I'm a doctor who does couple therapy, right? You could say I'm a sex worker. People come to me, I'm a counselor, I'm a doctor, I know anatomy, I know a fair amount of sexual health, and they come and tell me their problems, and I give them advice, they feel better, they send me an email and say, oh my gosh, Dr. T, we are now even pregnant, it's a year since we've met you and we wanted you to let you know this. And I'm like, wow, that's fantastic. So what is that, you know? So because I'm tlaleng and I have a medical degree, suddenly because I have other positive impacts on other people's sexuality, it's okay because remember I'm a doctor. Mm-hmm. But when it's another woman who says, well, with my body, with my skills of listening, my intuition, I speak well to clients, I give them great advice. But because it's that other woman, we say to her, well, you don't deserve rights. You deserve to be killed, in fact, for doing what you are doing. You see what I'm saying? So it comes to the whole thing. And in fact, when you want to know people's, what they think in life, ask them about sex work. Uh-huh. Always ask them what they think about sex work and what they think about abortion. Then you will know what type of person that is. Because what we are saying is, decriminalize means you allow people to come out and say, yes, I am a sex worker, or yes, I am a brothel owner. How do we help you make it safe? Because it's all about occupational health and risk for me as a doctor. And that's where my sort of outspokenness come with, and where my allyship lies with sex workers is as a healthcare provider. I know there's certain things that sex workers need, because sex for them is an occupation, so they're at higher risks of certain things, right? Like HIV, like other STIs, like chlamydia, herpes, gonorrhea. HIV is not the only concern. And also the type of sex they engage in may not be the same type of sex that if they had to come with their husband, they would say, yes, yes, we're having anal sex or whatever. There's many other types of sex, many other things people use during sex that they need advice on. And a lot of the times people can't just come freely. Even with a doctor, they feel very judged. So they can't get their comprehensive, the right advice, because they can't even say exactly what it is that they do. You know, in terms of health, in terms of banking services, where do health workers go to get banking and financial services where they will say, yes, I'm a sex worker. I'm not sure in terms of my income per month or when it comes or whatever, but yes, I need financial services. I need a house. I need a car. Where will they go for that? And what we are saying is these laws that have been made to control women are always to the benefit of men. It doesn't matter what law you think of. The laws that keep women marginalized were always done for the benefit of men. So sex work is the oldest industry in the world.
Mm.
But now when women are saying, in fact, we will do sex work, we choose it, but we want to do it on our terms, suddenly it's an outcry. The same policymakers who are saying no to decrim are the same policymakers who are buying sex workers at night.
Absolutely. That's the irony right there. I mean, I know you get absolutely frustrated. And I mean, like I said, I'm a huge fan of yours amongst the 18,500 others.
They're not all fans, by the way. Some of them are there to look.
No, I don't think you get 18,000 people who are just going to be hating on you. You know, more than likely, they
most
fascinated,
of them, yeah. And we engage a lot on my timeline.
You do,
yeah.
And because I remember one of your posts a while ago, you go, gosh, why was decriminalization presented as a new proposal? 1994 already, it was agreed that sex work decriminalization was the way to go. What's causing this snag, if I can call it? I mean, why are we still talking about decriminalization in 2017?
People who have power and benefit from power will not just give it up. It's always a fight. You can think about racial oppression and how even as black people were still fighting just to be black, and black and woman, right? So the whole thing with sex work decriminalization is you have a lot of other people who are real syndicates, and that's my just personal opinion, who are real syndicates in human trafficking industries, who make a lot of money by oppressing women and women who have no rights. Because remember, at the moment, a sex worker, and whether you are a transgender woman, whether you are a man who's a sex worker, you know, the gender of it and the sort of set of oppressive circumstances that sex workers face, it means that even the gender sometimes, you know, isn't the thing that will give you power in that industry as a sex worker, right? So what we are saying is, guys, come on. You know the research is there. You've seen all the different models being tried out in the world and they haven't worked. You cannot come in 2017 promoting the same models that don't take the South African context in terms of the legal history, but the socioeconomic history of how South Africa got where it got to. And what I'm more frustrated about is, does it mean that our political leadership or political, allies don't read their own documents? Because in 1994, the Women's Coalition, you know, took that motion of sex work having to be decriminalized. That was in 1994. It's now 2017 at the national conference, the policy conference, and yet people are presenting it as if it's a new thing, as opposed to how far are we? Why has this not happened? Because those are the pertinent questions that will get us to where we need. Not all sex work must be decriminalized and we're presenting this new idea. It's not a new idea. You know, the WHO, the Amnesty International, your local women's legal center, you know, there's a law commission, gender commission, have all said that sex decrim is the way to go. And yet even with SANEC, which is the mother body of, you know, the response to HIV in South Africa, have removed, you know, decriminalization as part of something that, you know, that body, you know, is working towards. It was always there. You know, sex workers feature in the National Strategic Plan for HIV for SANEC. And all along, sex work decrim was understood to be one of the goals, you know, because people understand the drivers of making this a criminalized, you know. In fact, consensual adult sex is criminalized when people make money off it. But when you're married after Lobola, it's fine, you know. And that's the whole thing is how, why are we not, you know, coming up with or asking the right questions? You know, if you keep asking, should we be doing this? 1994 already said, yes, we should. So the question is, why haven't we? And that will give us the right answers to then sort of try get, you know, way forward. And if you think of South Africa and how our health system is in a way captured by American US aid money and foreign funding, a lot of what we come up with are not homegrown solutions. They're solutions that the funder dictates. And so SANEC is one example of an organization where South African issues are being neglected to take forward the issues of the funder.
You were part of the Critical Thinking Forum.
I was in the audience, babes.
In the audience.
Levels.
So you...
Yeah, I was in the audience.
Levels. I like that.
Yeah, I was in the... there's the people and then there's us. I was in the audience.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But you were part of the dialogue. You contributed towards
yes,
it.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Because you discussed whether the country should decriminalize sex work, right? From a public health perspective. What was the outcome of that?
Look, I think talking is good. Getting people in a room who are having different views to talk, it's a good thing. Because oftentimes, you know, when you on the one or the other side, you almost, you know, only talking to people that like what you say. It's always good to know what others are saying, even if you don't like it. And so that's what that was. It wasn't a forum to come up with any recommendations or to break borders or to come up, you know, or like it was just literally people coming in a room to talk, which is good. Dialogue is good. We all need to hear what everyone is saying so that you can, you know, get those people who are on the fence, you know, pick the low hanging fruit, so to say, and show people why it's important. Because there aren't any bad women, just bad laws. And that's one of the slogans that we keep reiterating, you know, a lot with part of the sex worker movements like Asijigi, you know, like Sweet, like Sisonke. No bad laws, no bad women, hey? Just bad laws. And that's what we need to realize. Okay. This hierarchy of, oh, I'm a good woman because, or you are the bad one because, you never know what life will throw at you. And what we are saying is, if you are a woman or a person, in fact, because that's what my coalition stands for, we're saying, you know, any person, regardless of geography, regardless of gender, regardless of sexuality, regardless of age, regardless of religion, you should have your sexual rights and your reproductive rights and health be done in such a way that's body affirming and respectful and with dignity. That's all we're saying.
Yes. Papi, a guy, obviously, wants to know, well, posed a question to you. What is the difference between sex workers and those ladies that get money or demand money from their blessers?
What are blessers? Let's just start there. What are blessers?
Sugar. Let's call it sugar daddy who gives me money and
let's be honest.
Is that not how relationships
have always been since our mothers and their mothers and their great 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 mothers? Yeah. Were those women not dating older men?
True.
Because older men are the ones who are, you know, into careers. They're more advanced. They're more financially secure, and therefore they get a younger bride and they form a family, right? Because back then, women were not really in industry. Women are not really working. Even if you were, it was still the minority. The system of society says men go out with younger women, right? And they make a family. So what's this thing about now judging the women in 2017? That's how the world system is. It's always been that way. So now we call them blessers and blessees because it suits whose agenda. It's always been that way. Most of us are married to guys who are older, guys. Let's be honest. So why are they not blessers? Do you see what I'm saying? So a lot of what we're saying and naming and giving tags is to make ourselves feel better then. That's all.
Okay, so to answer Papi's question, you would say?
I would say, it. Look, a lot of people will never say I'm a sex worker, but I told you I'm a doctor. And half of what I do is selling a service that makes people feel better about their sexuality.
Yes.
What is that?
Okay. There was a Twitter post a while ago. It reads, every random day, a famous or any woman selling the working hard dream and lavish life but lay for pay with married men is always a sad one. The response to that, tweeting from experience, are we? And then you went on participating on this because I knew you were not going to let this one pass you.
Listen, who said I was responding to that? First of all.
Ooh.
First of all.
I may look made up, you know, but I could put two and two together. You know, I've got a couple of brain cells. Your response is laying for work. Is laying for money not work? And then you say hashtag asking for a friend. I thought that was spicy. You see why you got 18,000 followers on Twitter?
But like, guys, like, seriously, are we still on those types of thinking? And you know, that made me so sad because in that industry, the entertainment, film and TV and radio industry in South Africa specifically, we know how many young people are exploited for sex. People sexually harass them for jobs. And when they are in jobs, people expect sexual favors for them. And to then judge someone else, right, in inverted commas, selling the hardworking life. Damn it, it's hard work having sex with an old puffy man with a big mkaba that you don't even like, who doesn't even know what an orgasm is or what even a clit is, okay? It's damn hard work. And what I'm saying is the issues are more serious than just bringing down other people just because you have made it now. Because that same person 10 years ago wouldn't have tweeted something like that. Or because now you've made it, now the rest of us who are still trying to climb it are now called names. Like, no, guys, it's actually deeper than that. And you know sexual harassment is a crime in this country. So instead of saying, oh my gosh, like, I'm so disturbed by how women, young, often black women, are forced in situations where they have to do sexual favors. People are even demanding that of them. I've had that experience where someone at that broadcaster, the national one, has insinuated that for me to get a radio slot, there's certain, you know, washing of hands that need to happen, you know, right? We scratch each other's backs. And I'm thinking, okay, what does that even mean? So that disturbed me enough to be like, okay, never mind, moving on, right? Other people don't have the luxury of just saying moving on. People are conflicted. Our lives are contradicted. And it's not fair to put someone in that position where they've people have made sexual innuendos or they're already in a job and they're sexually harassed to keep jobs, you know. And for me, I mean, yes, there's that Twitter spiciness of it, but there's actually a deeper, you know, more serious issue about how we look away even as women because it makes you think you're the better slut.
You're right. Sure. Wow. Okay. That is profound. You know, okay, age and body shaming. Women such as Madonna and Cher are labeled sluts for wearing so-called skimpy,
but they're still
tight,
better sluts because they are white,
revealing,
remember?
Revealing. Ooh. That's a topic for another day.
I'm just saying.
Let's keep it to, you know, women. Let's I'll bring you another time for
We can go there.
Topic. Yeah. So they're labeled sluts, right? Yeah. I mean, for wearing skimpy, tight clothing, but groups such as Aerosmith and Kiss, at some point, the likes of Eric Benet and Maxwell, you know, could wear spaghetti strap muscle tops.
Didn't he give us that video with the
I can't elaborate much on that because Matthew's listening to this show, so you're not going to get me in trouble like that. I know you. You're a troublemaker.
You didn't fall for it.
I cannot sleep in the guest bedroom. Okay,
blame it on me. Okay, I'll come over and we'll keep each other warm.
I don't believe you. So I mean, why are men glorified as studs and rock stars, and women we given all sorts of names? What is going on? And it's still going on. I mean, today, an incident that I'm talking about, or rather what brought on for me to add this onto our conversation today, was because Cher performed at the Billboard Music Awards not so long ago. And this Morgan guy, you know, he's no stranger to body shaming and age shaming women. And he goes on, "Come on, Cher, for goodness sake, love." He continued, "She's a grandmother, for goodness sake, just put it away, grow old gracefully."
Oh, gosh. I mean, gracefully. Oh, wow.
Have you ever?
Wow. Gracefully on whose terms? Like, it, but that's the thing. It's so condescending. It's so patronizing. And of course, it's sexist. I mean, that's just, that's what it is. And exactly because the people who are doing exactly the same are probably even older than Shay, because they are men, it's okay. Mm. But that's the thing about the world doesn't like a confident woman. The world doesn't like a woman who's into her own sexuality and celebrating that sexuality. You know, it's fine if you're walking around bare-breasted, right, and you are chosen as a wife. But don't you dare walk around breasted where we don't give you the permission to, and we're not glorifying you or making your existence now, you know, more esteemed, because the men are there to nod and say, yeah, well done, she's a great one. When you're doing it on your own terms, that's where the problem is. The world doesn't have a problem with sexuality or nudity. The world has a problem with women benefiting from their own nudity and their own sexuality. And that's what that is.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, the reed dance, when you look at the reed dance in Swaziland, the maidens, as you would call them.
Oh, in KwaZulu.
In KwaZulu-Natal, bare-breasted, that's okay, because a king is, you know, in line or standing in line to pick...
Will say that, okay, it's not always for picking a wife, which is fine. But the point is, it is a cultural event which has significance. And that's what historically it signified, right?
Yeah.
So if you're even looking at rape culture and people saying, yeah, but she was wearing a mini skirt. Mm. Well, umkhosi womhlanga, it's not even just a mini skirt. It's a few little, you know, beads to hide vaginas and, you know, and bums. So why is nobody getting, you know... So it's a whole mentality thing of how people generally value women, and how even as a society, you know, as young girls, we're already taught from an early age, sit this way because you are a girl. No one said sit this way because, I don't know, the draft or a breeze. It's always just because you are a girl. And if you press them for an answer, wapap. Wapap.
You forward.
Yeah,
for those
don't climb trees because you are, it's like, but guys, trees are for climbing. Like, who must climb these trees, you know? And that's how we then raise kids. You know, boys are allowed to be adventurous. They're allowed to be rude, even, because boys will be boys, remember? And therefore, we're already telling young girls that they need to behave a certain way, but not a certain way for their benefit.
Yes.
A certain way to be likable, to be a good wife, to have grace one day so you can be chosen. That's all that it is about, disciplining young girls. And unless, as a mother, as a father, you are consciously doing things different, you are just doing exactly what you were taught. And what you were taught is not necessarily, you know, the best. Yes, you may have survived it. You may even be thriving in it now, because society rewards women who are well behaved, right? So it may, to an extent, actually work out. But what you are saying is that the society we want? Do we want girls who are outspoken to be the different ones? Is that the society we want?
Good question. The next comment, which I want you to comment on, because I know you're sharp-witted like that.
Oh, God.
So the next one goes, Shay, how unclassy can you be? Feminism isn't classy, no matter the age. I don't even know there was such a word. Did you know?
I thought maybe the type.
Feminazism. Yeah.
Feminazism.
Feminazism.
Okay,
so let me try it again. Third time lucky. Feminism isn't classy no matter the age. Please don't bring the respectable elder generation down. Your response?
Okay, I don't understand what that is. I'm sorry. So is she saying that... Is there an A before feminism there? What?
There is an A, yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's A, feminism, isn't?
Perhaps, yeah.
Sure.
I think I'd be more worried about the sentence construction than her actual thoughts, no? In this case, no?
I really want to respond, but I don't know if she's saying that A, feminism is a thing and therefore we must allow women to age
gracefully. Yeah.
Gracefully according to who? Because she's making a choice. I mean, she's a human being
who and says, this is from a woman.
I like wearing what I'm wearing and I'm performing or I'm not, whatever. I mean, Cher doesn't even need to perform to be Cher, right?
True.
I love her to bits, by the way.
Mm.
And therefore, let her be who she wants to be.
Exactly.
Does that make sense? Like the fact that she's got autonomy to take decisions on her body and a right to self-determine for herself what graceful is. And why does it even come into play about being graceful or not? I mean, she's a very artistic person. She's very, like, exuberant. She's out there, like, hello. I mean, geez.
I think, you know, the fact that this comment that I just read came from a woman just shows you, you know, about how we actually treat each other as women. I'm going to touch on that just now. But I mean, you know, I think perhaps this woman, the comment came from a place of jealousy, if I can call it that. Because, I mean, she's 71.
Yeah.
She gives some of us a run for our money. I mean, when you look at her body, I mean, the fact that she was wearing a see-through onesie, I mean... I look at a body at the age of 71 and I'm like, you go, mama.
I'm just looking at muscles. I'm like, oh, that's that muscle. Oh, that's the one they taught about, you know, at med school. Like, that's how. So I think how we also relate to bodies is more telling of who you are. Because
you're
if the only way you look at a human body is through sexuality, then maybe there is something not okay, maybe with how you view the world and not necessarily the person whose body that is. Because there are many other things to marvel at a human body.
Absolutely.
Beyond just the sexual lens.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's the issue, is that all of us are only, some of us are only looking at the human form, at the human body through sexualizing. And that's why some people will say, well, but why are kids wearing, swimming costumes when there are adults around? It's like, but what's wrong with those adults that a child can't be in a swimming costume because there's adult men around? Well, then maybe they're not just adult men. Maybe they're pedophiles, and get those men away from kids.
Mm.
But the society is always around, right? Respecting and honoring the men, and oh my gosh, there are these sexual beasts who have no control of what they think and what their bodies do, and they have to relieve themselves. And who's that relief on? On women. Do you see where we're going? So our bodies are only for one thing.
You're right.
Yeah. So I think it's important to be able to look at the world, just generally the world, through different spheres and through many angles, and not just where you come from or just what you have been taught, because there's a whole lot of other things outside just your realm of existence.
You know, society has a problem with someone like Brigitte Macron being 24 years younger, older than the French president Emmanuel Macron, but there are no derogatory comments or remarks towards President Donald Trump, who is 30 years older than Melania. Your thoughts?
Again,
your
it's the system. Patriarchy is a system, and it's not gendered. And that's what some of these examples show us.
So we can age shame women, but not men.
But not men. And no one is calling Donald a blesser. And Melania a blessee. Do you see? Again, about classism. So class affords you certain respect in society. People look away all the time because it's the rich fellow in the neighborhood who's known to be a thug. But because he's rich, right, people look away. How often do people, hey, kastraten say, yo, why isn't there a believe in that demurut? Wait till you are so respected. That's the thing. Class or the position that you assume in society often can make other people get away with a lot of things. So exactly in this situation, you know, now the wheels are turned, and suddenly, you know, people are shaming, the wife, I can't remember her name, for being younger.
Melania,
No, the French president. They're shaming her for being older than the president.
Yes, Bridget Macron.
And yet, even the age gap is not even that dramatic if you look at presidents of the world and their partners.
True.
But again, because it's an older woman, why? How dare she?
You know, on the topic of, body shaming, not necessarily age shaming in this regard, but your opinion and thoughts on Zodwa Wamandu?
National asset.
Yeah?
Yeah, guard her. We need to guard her. We need to, like, protect her. She's every damn thing.
Did you know that she charges 20,000?
Of course she must.
For an appearance and...
Yeah, I think it was after the Durban July that some of that really started to be quite lucrative, you know. I think she's been to Zimbabwe as well. That's amazing, girl. Work it.
And
she's got focus. Lunali busy la jaeva mo for what? Sonia, busy ki runaba rajaeva Friday for what?
And she makes 20,000.
She's got focus.
At the end of the
night. That's a focused woman.
At the end of the night, she's gotten 20,000.
I'm here for that.
I'm
here for that.
So now, I want to change the gear up a bit. You know, women who are cheated on, often they're very quick to expose the mistress. Why are we struggling with the actions of, if you really had to, if you were so upset at finding out that your partner was cheating on you, to get to a point where you actually post a picture of this woman and you wanting to tell the world, because you're mission is to put a face out there, because in your mind you are exposing the slut. Mm. You are exposing a woman that's broken down your marriage. You exposing the woman who enticed your man.
Always.
You're exposing the woman that stole your man. I mean, as if...
Because people are stolen, right?
People can be kidnapped, but I'm not sure about stolen. A car can be stolen, you know? So... Why are we doing that to ourselves? Women, why do we feel the need to shame the mistress? And not this particular woman was trending for a whole day on Twitter because she started off in the morning. And the fact that she's got so much time on her hands.
Created a whole new handle and
perhaps
everything.
Perhaps that's one of the reasons why the man cheats. You know, cheats because, I mean, he's thinking you're just sitting at home and you're on Twitter the whole day and you're watching omnibus of whatever.
Well, if they say it's who they say it is, then I'm not so sure they're watching omnibus.
You and I both know who. Because, I mean, the account was created on the day. But, you know, her case is not, you know, is not in isolation, because we hear of stories all the time where, you know, you post a picture, you're trying to expose the mistress, but never the husband. Mm. Why is it never the husband's fault? Why do we have this thwarted thinking in our heads that, you know, you stole my man and I don't expose my man and I try and shield my man? What is going on?
Yeah, it's deep and it can be very deep, but let's keep it superficial. I think a lot of the times love is complicated, love on its own, right? And marriages or long-term relationships or whatever it is are also complicated and quite layered. And, you know, we may look at other younger women and say, oh, bless her, bless she, and you're getting weaves and cars and everything. There's a lot of married women who are making decisions to stay in marriages for school fees, cars, whatever it is. And it's okay. I mean, I'm all about people making choices that are beneficial for them. It doesn't have to be the right choice for me, but as long as you are like, okay, this is my option and I'm doing this because I need 1, 2, 3, which is fine. So the issue comes with people who then expose the mistress. I think there's two parts for me. I think people perform this thing like it's a performance. You know, my husband is cheating and I found out, but you know, I exposed the mistress. They're performing for the husband to be like, oh, do you see what a good wife I am? Like, I'm sorting our problem out. Do you see where this is going?
Okay.
So it's our problem and I'm sorting it out, because maybe, and people will say it out loud, like, I wasn't enough, or I wasn't that, or I wasn't this, or I wasn't. And I'm thinking, but you can be all of that and a person who's an adult, right, who's married to you and took vows to honor you, still goes and cheats. So a lot of women are so used to shaming themselves, self-loathing, that you actually then perform it because you think that's what the other person will need. You think that's what the other person needs to see to still deem you deserving of love. Because a lot of these women don't leave these partners who have cheated, right? So they're in marriages or in relationship where they're thinking, I need to do something to show my commitment yet again, because maybe he won't do it again. Because if you expose him, then well, you've exposed him, then what's going to happen to your so-called, you know, security in marriage or love in a marriage, you know? So there's a lot of reasons people don't expose their husbands, because in fact they plan on staying. If you expose them, then you've ruined the whole thing. But if you expose them, madam, for me, just looking from the outside, it looks like a performance. And unfortunately, again, it feeds into the same cycle of, you know, slut shaming and all of that. But it doesn't get you anywhere. Because often, a lot of us will know, you have been shellad by a man who was married and you only found out later. Whether you went out with him or not, on a one date or 2 days, it doesn't matter. But the point is, you have been approached by someone who was married. They never say to you they were married, and you find out later. And some people do go out with these guys and they have relationships with them. You know, I used to work in a mine, right? So I know a lot of guys who used to be in the mine for the week. Friday, they go home, wherever home is, and then they're back Monday morning or Sunday night. And they have two families, the one back wherever home is and one back at the mine. And you will hear the narratives. Ah, I know when they find out, they'll fight against each other, but you know how women are.
And you know what the sad thing about it, or what makes us women even appear as, you know, sad and pathetic, is that you often hear of conversations where men are chilling at a shisanyama or at a car wash discussing, you know, very casually about the fact that they've all slept with the same woman. And they'll even cheers a beer together. But as women, you can never ever find such conversations where women are congregating in a room and saying, I also had that, you know, that beefcake, you know. There'd be claws coming out at each other. But five men can sit in a room and discuss how they've all had the same woman, and they'll not fight about it. They'll not post it on social media, but we seem to do that. But I like how you called it self-loathing. That's what you called it.
Yeah, it is. And I must tell you, like, now the opposite of that. There are men where if they find out that maybe the one woman, right, has them both as a partner, the violence of masculinity can never be, what's the word, underestimated. You know, us women, we fight, we post on Facebook, we make Twitter handles, and we yep the whole day, slut shame. Men literally kill each other. They shoot each other or they stab each other to death for some of the things that women only gossip and bitch and moan about. And that's the other end of the scale. And because we are women, right, we are in the center of all of this gossiping and all of this outing of other women. The opposite of what men do to each other, they kill each other. So it's not to say that, you know, we any better or we any worse. But all I'm just saying is masculinity is just as toxic sometimes when these guys find out. And a lot of the time, they don't just out people on Facebook and Twitter and yep. They kill each other. And so we need to do both. We need to look at how we are socialized as women, but we also need to tackle the issue of masculinity, because a lot of men die at each other's hands. Yeah, it's not women who kill men violently. Men are killing each other violently also because of some of these issues that we discuss.
I've already alluded to the fact that you made a few comments on this particular post, and I think you in person was responsible for this woman turning her Twitter handle from public to private. Did you realize that
I didn't even care.
You made a comment that led her to privatize her Twitter account. Yes, and I think you were the reason.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, well, I said what I said and I moved on. So I had no idea what that was going on. What did I even say?
No, because she went on to comment that, why should I shame my husband?
Well, you see.
And, you know, for me, I was reading the timeline thinking, shame, this poor woman woke up and she wanted sympathy. In my mind, honestly, she needed a shoulder to cry on, you know. And I thought to myself, why didn't you call a friend and go out for
a spa day, a champagne breakfast,
and you know, because it backfired. People were brutal.
You know why? Because we are just so sick and tired. Like, you know, like as a woman, as a just a black woman in South Africa, like you are being attacked on every front. You are at work, you are in the street, you are in church, you are just walking around trying to get a taxi. It doesn't matter. You're in the supermarket queue. It doesn't matter where you are. Just being you is always seen as something that's provoking other people, or you're not good enough, you're too loud. Like, where can we go just to be ourselves? And to then sit on Twitter and just witness this. And it was escalating and escalating and escalating. And of course, I mean, it came on my timeline somehow. And I know I was like, what is it? What is this? And I just, you know, said what I had to say. And I think it's just unfortunate that, you know, that's how we still choose to you know, to engage and respond. But I really do think it speaks to a much deeper level of self-loathing. And that we are also taught as married women who are, especially the night before, you know what, you are told, a man will cheat, he's an ex and he cuts all this wood. I get it, we are told that. I'm fortunate. I was never told any of that rubbish. I know where home is. When shit hits the fan, I take my things and I go back home, because home is home. You know, it will never not be my home. So, but that's the issue, that a lot of women don't have that luxury. They were told that we've taken people's lobola and now you must go and make it work and
stick it out.
And it's that type of thing, is that now you have the burden of not humiliating your family because your husband did things that he wasn't supposed to be doing. And that's the thing again, is that society burdens women with upholding, you know, society's morality. We look to women to reflect what we think is good or bad with society. And we're just saying we are sick and tired of that, because often we are the ones who are being, you know, done things to, whether it's sexual violation, whether it's physical abuse, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's workplace, people asking for sexual favors. You see what I'm saying? So that's why this stuff for me, it's so annoying on a level that's like yet to be determined even. Like, it's so deep that how are we as then people, human beings, then perpetuating these scars on each other when we know them so well personally? So how would I choose to do that to you when I know what it is? You know, it's just, I don't understand.
No, I really felt sorry for this lady that, you know, created this account, because clearly the account was created just for this purpose and it backfired.
Yeah, if my friends allow me to do that crap, then I'm dumping all of them. I'm sorry.
You know, instead of, you know, giving sympathy or empathizing, people were commenting how beautiful this Rita girl was. And then someone went on to say, how else will she stay this beautiful? She has to get sponsored by your husband. And I thought, ouch.
We are tired. We are tired. That's what it is.
That hurts.
We are just so tired. You know.
You know, moving on, yeah? Exactly a year ago, yesterday, Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training, Mduduzi Manana, was partaking in the sexual gender-based violence dialogue.
Where? It's significant where that was.
Yes.
At Rhodes University.
Yes. Mm-mm. So exactly a year ago, and then we hear of his alleged, I'm calling it alleged because I don't want any lawsuits, right? Assault on a woman. Oh, your opinion on that?
Well, my opinion starts last year this time. Because I've been involved a lot with campuses, right? When we, especially around the issues of FISMAS 4, but within the movement of FISMAS 4, there was a lot of women, black young women, who were sexually abused by their very own comrades within the FISMAS 4. And a lot of it was hidden, because that thing again, you know, black women divide the movement when you come here with your gender issues. This is about race and then fees falling. And yet the very same people that you are marching with are the very people who are your abusers, right? So as part of another platform that was sponsored by Foundation for Human Rights, you know, we did come together nationally as people and who are concerned about what is going on. So that comes at the back of the reference list as well. I don't know if you remember the students at the University of Cantonese Roads did release that list of rapists that are known, that the establishment is doing nothing about.
Yes.
So all of that comes at the back of all of these things that are left undone and poorly managed. So that panel is interesting because it was also the vice chancellor of that very university. And I was with him on another platform on TV talking about rape culture on campuses. And I mean, he was completely porous and very much, you know, having no vision in terms of how are we going to get this done. And that was unfortunate because even he has cases that he should have been dealt with before that hadn't been dealt with properly as a vice chancellor. So that was a complete farce that you have a vice chancellor who students already find quite triggering. They find not representing of the values of protection and having women in that campus feeling safe that he is there as the vice chancellor. So that was already a farce. And the fact that now you have two other men, one being the deputy minister Manana and the other one being the head of the HIV response youth program for campuses, is that you have three men on a panel discussing sexual gender-based violence. Mm. And the title of that is like, what is sexual gender-based violence? Yo, anyway, at Rhodes University, with all of this history that I've just told you, actually pushing them to do something. Out of desperation, they did that. That wasn't a well-thought-out plan. That was just out of desperation.
Mm.
And therefore, what I then... I knew that the night before, but it was at night, couldn't do much. So the following day, I post that pamphlet. I'm like, discuss for 10 marks. On my time, because I'm like, surely I can't be the only one. So I'm not gonna say what's wrong with this picture. What I just said, discuss for 10 marks. And people then said what they thought about that panel, about the theme and all of that. So another thing is men always center themselves in the struggles of women. And they always come at the end when they have been stubborn, when they have been inactive, when they have been impatient with the very issues that the women and black feminists in that university, more than once, more than twice, more than three times, said there is a big problem here. Some people put their bodies on the line. I don't know if you remember, that was one of the first universities to have a police presence and response to student protests, right?
Mm.
To then have a three male panel discussing sexual gender-based violence at the back of all of that. Who are you kidding? So needless to say, that never happened. That never happened because it was disrupted by the black women at Rhodes University who said, not in our watch, not with those three people on the panel.
Wasn't there thinking perhaps along the lines of if we have men in the panel talking about sexual gender, and that's the title as it is, right? Sexual gender-based violence. I mean, don't you think in their minds, they thought that it would have more of an impact to have men discussing
such? That's the issue, is that they come at the very end of a very desperate situation with PR, with three men. Why? Because they think they hold more societal power. They think they hold more, or at least they are more esteemed, right? Mm. They are held in more high regard. Well, they are wrong. All of them were wrong. Because it means they are so out of touch with what the students were saying. They were so out of touch with the mood of the country at the time. And even now, it's inappropriate to have an all three male panel. And then what they said was, yeah, but there's two women and both of them are moderators. Is that all we are now? We are relegated to admin and being facilitators. We cannot talk. These are the issues that are affecting the students. The students should have been on that platform and they should have said what they need, what their issues are. I mean, what more were those men going to bring to that situation?
Perhaps along the lines of men giving a message to other men who happen to be in the
then
audience.
Then go form a male CODESA to do that and title it that. Okay. Tackling toxic male masculinities, right? Go have that, but don't have that type of theme with on that background on that campus during that time. It doesn't make any. It means you are tone deaf. Like as a leader, how are you not knowing that that's not a good idea? It's tone deaf, and there are more than enough capable women to sit on those panels, and those women should be coming from that facility.
So are you of the belief that the deputy minister should have been in prison, arrested yesterday?
Well, he should at least go to his friend Malula and say, dude, that's what happened. And when he says in his letter, the law must take its course and I will cooperate, he should do that in person at a police station. Surely that's where cooperation happens. It doesn't happen on a piece of paper. A half-hearted apology because I was extremely provocated. Nah.
Because he says that he was extremely provocated because some woman called him gay.
Okay, there's two things to that, right? I work with people who are transitioning, right? Some of my patients are transgender women. Some of them are transgender men. So I'm very aware, just simply because of my daily work, that outing people, so the act of outing is me telling everyone or an audience or whoever it is in form of commentary that, ah, Sonia, you are gay, right? And you haven't done that. For whatever reason, you may not be ready, you may have other reasons, you may have safety concerns, because a lot of people are being killed just for being lesbians. Let's not forget about the trauma and that comes with people being who they are, especially in South Africa. So some people have a real, you know, fear for their lives. It's not to be undermined. So for me, I think the act of outing people, it's a form of violence. The issue is, in that scenario, we don't know what happened, but I don't think of any other way of me saying something like that to somebody in an argument about leadership of the country. I don't know where you are gay fits in that scenario. The response to that in terms of physical violence is wrong.
Mm.
It's wrong.
You're right.
You know, it's completely wrong. Mm. So I think what happened there is they nullified genuine people's concerns and safety fears about coming out and being who they truly are by having that homophobic, you know, slurs being passed around, and having someone who's a deputy minister who was on a panel about gender-based violence then reacting in the manner that he did. And not only that, the people around him, other men around him, held her down so he could do what he needed to do.
Mm.
And unfortunately, that is South Africa in a clip. That's what happens. People watch. People hold people who are marginalized down so they can get a further beating. Mm. A beating, whether it's a systemic beating, whether it's a literal beating, whether it's a rape. I mean, lots of people film people being raped in high schools. How often do we have those clips that are leaked of people watching and rather videotaping someone being raped than calling for help?
Mm.
So that whole scenario brings up so many different things, and it's all layered. You know, homophobia is not okay. And, you know, people say, oh, but why did he feel insulted to that point just because, you know, he was called gay? Let's ask him.
Mm. Doctor, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated. And I hope you enjoy your day tomorrow.
Thank you for having me.
My humble opinion, the only way to create a society where women are respected is to start by celebrating each other as women, supporting each other as women, and standing up for each other. Happy Women's Day for tomorrow. Aspire to inspire before you expire.
This is CliffCentral.com.